Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
Hello, Peter.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. You enjoying the sunshine that appears to actually have just gone today? It's just gone.
It was a lovely day. It was probably the nicest day. Well, certainly the nicest day of the year yesterday at time of recording, if not for, I don't know, since the end of last summer. It was, I went out in the evening because I didn't get my walk in during the day because I was a bit busy with work. So I went for my government approved walk in the evening. And oh boy, it was like 17 degrees, clear skies, birds singing. Just, oh, it was lovely. I really enjoyed it. And now the sun's gone.
It's gone. Have you made the most of it?
I did. Yeah. Excellent.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I have been trying to make the most of the weather, you know. I did pop into the office yesterday.
Yeah, you did.
I made the journey there to get some stuff that I needed because I went into self-isolation before we were all told to work from home, so I never got a chance to bring some things back with me that I really needed to. And so I went and got those, and I've been, you know, I've locked myself back up again, and I'm all safe and sound. But it was so lovely walking to work in the sunshine. Really nice. However,
was it really quiet as well in the streets?
Nope, definitely wasn't.
No.
Lots of people walking around, which seemed not great. Lots of traffic as well. Mm-hmm. And that all seemed very weird. It didn't seem that dissimilar from before all of this happened.
Oh, God. That's not good.
But that's the first time I've been over that direction since it has happened. So it's been very quiet around where I am. However, you're probably not going to see that much sunshine if you're stuck inside playing games all day.
Hey.
Which is exactly the kind of thing that we're going to talk about today on this here video game podcast. We're sponsored. We're always sponsored by a different company every single week. And Peter has the ad read right there in front of him.
Yes, this week's sponsor is it's the brand new, recently revealed at time of recording, Microsoft Sony multifaceted video game controller. Have you seen this new controller that's come out that apparently looks exactly like an Xbox controller but is also a PlayStation controller?
No, what is this?
Oh, well, apparently everyone thinks the new PlayStation controller, that is definitely not just a PlayStation controller because it also works on your Xbox, it looks just like an Xbox controller. And that seems to be the only discourse that's happening right now about the new PlayStation controller that's just come out. So I wanted to reveal exclusively that it's actually, you know, those really like bad knockoff back in the day, you used to be able to get really bad knockoff controllers that would like work for your like stereo and your TV and your like anything that could take a remote control. You could program them all into a single thing.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Sony have revealed exclusively to us that that controller works for everything, and that's why it looks just like it is perfect for an Xbox One. So. Today we're sponsored by the new multi-format gamepad from Sony.
Fantastic. That's a huge scoop.
It is a huge scoop. Yeah, it's a big one. It's almost as big as the lie that I just told you.
Whoa! Oh my goodness me. You got me.
I got you good.
You really did. I genuinely thought that it was an Xbox PlayStation controller.
Well, you would do if you'd been reading Twitter for the past few days. Yeah.
Got him.
Got him.
Got him. We're actually sponsored by the wonderful folks over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where if you go and support us for as little as 25 cents a week, that's $1 a month, you can ask questions on this podcast. We have other tiers available. We understand that it's a trying and strange time, and financially it might not be easy for you to support us, and those of you that do, You're bloody amazing. And if you're able to give any more, we have different tiers available where you get different rewards, like early access to certain things and so on. So go and check those out. Patreon.com/teamtriplejump to ask questions on this show. Just like, Peter, just like...
Just like MacIver the Mark. MacIver the Mark has asked a question. MacIver the Mark says, "Hey boys, hope you're doing okay in these strange times. Is there any game series or standalone game that you feel is essential for people to play? That can be due to either gameplay mechanics, story, revolutionary new ideas, or just because it's damn fun. The first game that comes to mind for me is To the Moon, a beautiful RPG maker game that made me truly appreciate storytelling in games as a medium." Good question. One that immediately came to mind for me was The Last of Us. I think that there are a lot of very good PlayStation exclusive, mostly linear, single player narrative games out there. Lots of really good ones. But, you know, I think the cream of the crop is still The Last of Us in terms of the emotional gut punches and the general gameplay as well, and the design, you know, just the overall polish. I think, you know, it's a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. And I really think that anyone who came to me and said, "I've just got a PS4, what game should I play?" That is one that I would say, if you never played The Last of Us, you know, on your PS3, play The Last of Us Remastered on your PS4. And broader still, if an alien came to me and said, "Oh, I've got a machine that can play any of your current gen video games," you know, I would still say, well, play The Last of Us, you know, even though you can play other stuff from other consoles, definitely get that one played because it's a good game. So I think in terms of, yeah, storytelling is up there. It's that I think that's indicative of storytelling. Mm. Outside of that, though, I would say, I honestly, I'm very biased, you know, I really like my old PlayStation games, but I really do think that it's worth always playing at least one of the Crash Bandicoot games in your early gaming life. I think it's the kind of thing that teaches you, you know, how to move around in a 3D platformer. It's got all the kind of, it's got loads of basic mechanics, but it's not overwhelming. I just think it's a good little starter game for mm-hmm. people to get into. So yeah, I think maybe, I don't know, I mean, Crash 3 is my favorite one, but yeah, any of them are good. So, yeah, those two, I think.
Excellent. I have a question about the aliens in your hypothetical situation.
Yes, yes.
Would they have any concept of, guns and the emotional connection between humans? Would they be able to truly appreciate the magnitude of what happens in The Last of Us? Or are they actually very empathetic creatures?
Maybe, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, really, the aliens are just placeholder for someone with a device. I guess in place of aliens, I could have just said someone who has just bought all of the current gen consoles. But for some reason in my head, it had to be a single machine that could run everything.
Right.
So therefore, it had to be an alien.
I mean, the idea, the concept of a person buying every single games console, having never played anything before, is so outlandish that they have to be from not this world.
It's more alien than the actual notion of aliens coming with a magical current-gen console machine.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is. Well, there we go. I think that's what MacIver was asking for about the aliens. Mm-hmm. So we covered that. You're welcome.
Yeah, yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I've got a few here. Again, talking about things from sort of your childhood, and I feel like almost a building block from which to start your video game playing journey I'm going to have to say one of the early Pokemon games, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Red, blue, or yellow, something like that. For example, if there were some sort of alien who came down and had no experience of games, which is a concept so unwieldy that they must be an alien. Mm-hmm. And they said, where do I start? Maybe they're a small alien. Maybe they're sort of an infant alien.
A Babelian.
Thank you very much. We were getting there. And they asked, where should I start? I would start them on something like that. Because those sorts of games, you know, people can go back and play them now if they want. And they've not aged poorly by any stretch of the imagination. However, if you start off playing Fortnite and then are sat down with a Game Boy Color and a copy of Pokemon Red, you're not going to be as impressed just inherently. You can't do that to a kid. I mean, a Babelian. So I would start someone off on that, personally. In terms of a more recent game, I think Batman Arkham Asylum is just such a phenomenal game. And a game that didn't even score that, like, ridiculously well. I think it got reviewed very well, but it didn't. I think it was, like, high 80s. It wasn't considered a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel like it's aged very well in terms of the way it's laid out. It's Metroidvania style of gameplay where you're returning to areas later on with new gadgets to get to different areas. But it never feels overwhelming. You can always sort of tell where you're meant to go next. And it still funnels you through with these amazing characters and this storyline that's genuinely interesting and you want to see what happens next. Mm. There's very little time where you're just sort of running around not knowing what you're meant to do. The combat is great. Even though you're just sort of pressing square a lot, it just feels really good. Even if you're not like a huge Batman fan, I'd still recommend playing this game. Yeah. So I just think it's a phenomenal video game. And finally, if I was to go with sort of the artsy-fartsy route, similar to the moon, as MacIver the Mark says, I'd probably say What Remains of Edith Finch.
Oh, okay.
Because that, in my mind, next to perhaps Journey, is one of those games that I think proves that video games can be art, because it's beautiful and the story it tells is just like heartbreaking and uplifting and a complete roller coaster, but it's absolutely fascinating. And I loved every minute of that game. You just go room to room in this old house experiencing the story of the person who used to live in it. Mm. And each one is like a different kind of mini game or presented from a completely different visual style. There's one where you're playing as a cat jumping from tree branch to tree branch. There's one where you're sailing a little boat around trying to avoid certain obstacles and stuff. It's just really good. It's just a really good game. I think that one is one that I would say, at least certainly one that came out in the past few years, that everyone should play if they want to experience an amazing story in a game.
Oh, it's funny because I thought about maybe saying Journey as well in an artsy fartsy kind of way, and you know, talking about What Remains of Edith Finch, for a question that's coming up, I've got some slightly similar games as an answer to a question that's on its way later in the podcast.
Oh my god, that's what a spooky time that is.
Yeah,
fantastic. Well, thank you for that question, Peter. It's time to move on to a section that's so groundbreaking that they've actually had to separate us by two counties.
Probably is two counties.
Is it? That was a complete guess, but it
I was going to say probably more, but actually, no, it might only be one, right?
County.
Yeah, I don't know. Possibly. Either way.
There's a huge geographical distance.
Whatever. I don't know. Let's pull up a map. No, let's not pull up a map. Let's just move on.
It's what we play in time. Peter, what were you playing?
I've been playing Star Wars this week.
Oh my god.
I'm enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. I knew I'd enjoy it a lot, but I'm enjoying it even more than that.
And which Star Wars is this?
This is Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy, which is a terrible, clunky title. Especially when you're trying to put in your colons and your hyphens when you write it out.
Right. You would have thought Jedi Academy would give you all the information you'd need.
Yeah. I mean, it's because it's part of the Jedi Knight series, which itself is in the sort of Dark Forces
I love Dark Forces. Lines.
Yeah.
They could have just gone for Star Wars Jedi, the college years, maybe.
That's what it feels like.
Animal House.
Yeah. It's a great game. I used to play it a lot on original Xbox, I think. And it is super RPG-ish. Well, not quite as much as Knights of the Old Republic is, where you are very much playing your own character. But there's a lot of RPG elements in Jedi Academy, considering it's just a sort of single player thing where you tick off a level one after the next, because you create your own character with limited options, admittedly, but you create your own character, you create your own lightsaber to start with. Then as you progress through the game, you can choose what order to do the missions in. You can normally leave out one mission in a certain chunk. So you get five to choose from. And you can, if you want, only do four out of the five and leave one behind and not have to do it, which is that's nice. You can choose force powers as you progress and go with good or bad powers and put different points in them, which is super fun. Then as you go further through the game, you unlock a new lightsaber stance, and you can again choose between fast or strong. And then as you progress further forward still, you're able to unlock the ability to use two lightsabers, one in each hand, or a double-bladed lightsaber, like the Darth Mauls.
Yes, love him.
And then on top of all that, there is a sort of morality branch in the story later on, sort of two-thirds of the way through, and you can end up having a good ending or a bad ending. So, you know, there's quite a lot to choose from. You can play it in lots of different ways, and the combat's just great. I was saying in the stream last time, I've done two streams of it now, but I was saying in the second stream that I think it's got to be my favourite lightsaber combat of any game that I've ever played. Now, I've not really played any VR lightsaber stuff before, but I'm sure that's probably pretty clunky, to be honest. But I would say it's definitely better for me than Jedi Fallen Order. And also Force Unleashed as well, which is a good game, but this is a lot better. So thoroughly enjoying it, having a lot of fun, and it's available. It's recently been made available on PS4 and Switch. I'm actually playing it on PC on Steam, but yeah, people in the chat have been saying that they've been buying it and having a go and enjoying it, so that's all good. Been having a great time streaming that.
Lovely. Yeah.
What have you been playing, Ben?
Well, I finished off Resi Zero.
Yeah.
That is not a phenomenal game.
Oh, no.
It wasn't that long, which was quite nice, but it was just, I ended up playing it with a guide because I just did not. It's one of those games where I just think, this doesn't respect anybody's time. I don't want to be running around like, you know, you've got to use weird things on weird things. It's so close to just being an adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
The early Resi games, that it just sort of ruins any sense of enjoyment for me. So
you got platinum?
It does have a platinum, yeah, it does. Nice. But it just, yeah, I didn't think it was particularly good. I'm glad I played it because, you know, I got to experience that story and see those characters that pop up in later Resi games and stuff,
because
it's all set before Resi 1. So that was, from my completionist Resident Evil standpoint, that's another one I've finished. So I've seen all of that, which is nice, and that's done. But I'm glad it's done. I've been playing a lot of Resi 3.
A lot.
I'm nearly done. Nearly finished it.
I heard it was like disappointingly short. I'm starting it next week. But yeah.
It's about 6 hours long.
Okay.
It's not very long at all, and it's quite expensive for a game that's 6 hours long.
Mm.
It's extremely polished, and again, it's a very cool game, especially if you played Resi 2 remake last year, because it's set in, obviously, in the same city. So there's a lot of location usage, but you get to see it before Resi 2 happens.
Right.
So I think half of Resi 3 is set before the events of Resi 2, and half is set after the events of Resi 2. From what I understand, anyway. So you get to see the outbreak as it's happening and go to various locations that are featured in Resi 2. And it's like, oh, wow, look at this. Can't go through this door, though. I know. I literally said when I was playing it, I'm really interested to see what Boundary Break can find.
Yeah.
By flying through these doors and seeing if they've actually rendered anything or if it's just a shell. Because that was a room in Resi 2, and I want to know if there's something in there. You know, it's very polished. Shooting's very good. I did just play through a bit last night that I found extremely annoying, which felt so not like anything in any Resi game I've ever experienced, where you literally just have to survive in a room against an obscene amount of zombies and various other antagonistic forces. And it's a very small room. Another thing that annoys me about Resi 3 is that the zombies just sort of, they have maybe a 2 meter radius where if you're remotely near them, and there is a button to dodge, but it's not very good. And it's not very clearly signposted when you're meant to press it for it to work. But if you're within that 2 meter radius, the zombies will just sort of magnetize to you. They'll just latch onto you and you can't throw them off. They will hurt you every time.
Right.
You don't have like tactical knives you can stab to get rid of them or whack a grenade in their mouth or whatever, like other Resi games. You just get hurt. And that's extremely annoying, especially when you're in that claustrophobic environment that I was just describing against tons of zombies. And it's a section that just completely outstays its welcome and goes on for ages. And if you die at any point, you have to start the whole thing again. There's like a point that the lights go out halfway through and you have to get the power back on again in this tiny little room. But if you die after that point, you then have to start again and do all of it up until the power going out. And it was just a section that I didn't think was very good. And that stuck out to me so far as a bit of this game that I don't like. But that's the only bit, because I am really enjoying playing it through, and I'm enjoying being really thorough and going room to room and opening all the boxes and clearing all the rooms and making them blue and stuff like that. As I said in the Quipscope, I think I'm lucky in that I didn't play Resi 3 originally. So I don't know what I'm missing in terms of stuff that's being cut out. It's a highly polished Resident Evil experience that a lot of people will really, really enjoy. And there's nothing wrong with it beyond slightly dodgy zombie mechanics where they grab you. That rubbish room and stuff being cut out. But I don't know what the stuff is being cut out. I don't know that. So enjoying Resi 3. Very good.
Good.
Continue to play SmackDown Here Comes the Pain on stream.
Yes,
of That's course. Going very well. Barbara is the US champion now. It's extremely exciting. She's in a faction called Da Squad with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. What a group. Unbelievable. And beyond that, I've played a tiny little bit of Bloodborne and started Final Fantasy VII, which I've talked about on Quipscope, and did a stream of that, so you can go catch up on that now if you want. And that's me.
Wonderful.
That's what a blue.
That's brilliant. Very pleased to hear it. We've got a question here from Spotnik.
Yeah.
Would you like to read it?
Are you okay?
Yeah, sort of transformed from, I don't know what that first voice was, a brand new character.
Right. Got a question here from Spotnik.
That's
and then it
say.
Gradually sort of, it went, oh, got a question here. Would you like to read it, son?
Extra
50's worth of
question.
Huh? Yes. Off you go, son.
Having been stuck in bed for the last 2 weeks, nothing to do with the C virus, damn kidney stones, Animal Crossing has really helped me maintain all my sanity. There's another character for us. One thing that surprised me is that my mum wants to know whenever I'm playing it, because she is loving watching me play Animal Crossing. She has no interest in video games whatsoever, and this has got me thinking. What other games are there that non-gamers will happily sit down and watch you play and get engaged with? Hope you feel better soon, Spun.
Absolutely, yeah. Kidney stones are terrible things. Yeah, get well soon.
You should plant one and then you'll get a whole new bladder.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've got one answer that I know non-gamers, or at least a certain non-gamer, likes to watch. When I first got my PS4, you lent me your Drake collection. The original Uncharted trilogy for PS4, and I sat and played that because I'd been we were also given a copy of Uncharted 4 by like the press when we were at What Culture, So I had that. I think I took that home. And then I just had this. But I obviously wanted to play the original trilogy first. So I was playing that. And my fiance, Amy, who does not play games at all, really, outside of The Sims and maybe a bit of. She still plays Theme Hospital quite regularly, which, you know, it's relevant now, I guess.
Persona 5.
Persona 5, yeah, that was, I mean, that was a revelation when she actually played that all the way through. That was, like, really her first. She doesn't like using two sticks at the same time. She can't really, you know, manage camera and character movement all at once. But she learned how to do it with Persona, which was great. But, yeah, she doesn't really play games other than The Sims. But she really enjoyed watching me play through all four of the main Uncharted games and would almost be a bit disappointed if, you know, if I came home from work and she was, you know, out with friends or whatever, and if I'd played a bit without her, she'd kind of want to know, ah, oh, but what happened to Drake? He was in that cave with the Yetis, and what happened? There were Yetis, and now I don't know. Catch me up. Tell me. So I think that just the cinematic style of those games makes them super watchable, even if you're not into games. I think you still have to be into sort of vaguely into the action genre. I don't think your nan is necessarily going to want to watch you play Uncharted, but yeah, definitely. I think as long as you're, if you like Indiana Jones, you could definitely sit and watch the Uncharted games, particularly late, like the as you progress through the series, I think it becomes even more watchable. I think the first one is actually very heavy on just gunplay, really. Having played it again fairly recently, I remembered, like, oh yeah, this is, there's really a lot of just sitting behind walls and shooting people, but yeah, they become more cinematic as you go. The other two games, though, that I personally, I watched, I mean, I know I'm a gamer, but I think, gamer or not, they're super fun to watch. I watched Everybody's Gone to the Rapture and Firewatch on YouTube in full, and I think those, you know, in a similar way to Edith Finch, I think that sort of kind of walking sim style, obviously Edith Finch has a lot more gameplay to it, but that idea of exploring a place and being very story focused, narrative heavy, I think they're super watchable. And, you know, the fact that Everybody's Gone to the Rapture is actually voiced by certain members of the cast of The Archers. I think actually my nan would genuinely watch a playthrough of Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. It's just like an episode of The Archers, but with a visual aspect to it. So, yeah, I think, quote unquote, walking simulators are super watchable, whether or not you're a gamer. So, and, you know, Firewatch is so beautiful visually, like the palette, you know. Mm. You could take any screenshot from that game and frame it, and it would look great on your wall. And likewise, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. You know, just seeing a quaint little English village rendered in you know, computer graphics is, there's something about that that, even though we've got it outside of our window right now, we can go and just look at phone boxes and stuff. There's something about just seeing it in a game that I think is really enjoyable. But yeah, those are my suggestions.
Great suggestions. Everybody's Thanks. Gone to the Rapture is a great shout. I remember being so excited for that when it came out, and I have never taken more screenshots in a game than I have in Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. There, I have just so many. I think I got rid of them in the end because they were just there was about 40 of them. Every sort of new area I came to, I just framed it just right, took a nice little screenshot.
Yeah,
perfect. It was a very good game, and you're right. I think. Walking simulators, there's got to be a better term for that. And it's sort of gone from a derogatory name to sort of that's just what they're called now. But those kinds of games do lend themselves very easily to people watching because gameplay can be really fun to watch. Like, I think Doom is really fun to watch.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you said with Uncharted, you don't just want to, you know, people can lose interest. It's the story that people are interested in, not just hiding behind walls and shooting. Yeah. But Animal Crossing is a huge one right now. I think it might purely just be because it's video game chores, for want of a better term. Like, it's just very relaxing and simple. And, you know, you're going around and harvesting fruit and digging holes and cutting down trees and all that kind of stuff. You know, not the kind of chores we can do in real life necessarily. But I think there's just something inherently relaxing about it that people are really latching onto. And it's interesting to hear that extends to people who are just watching. But in my own personal anecdotal experience, I remember playing Gran Turismo on PS1, and my dad was really interested in it because cars. Yeah. And he used to play on my PS1 when I wasn't, to play Gran Turismo, even though he does that thing where he turns the controller with his hands while he's steering. Yeah. You know that? To make it turn better, because that's how it works. I had a similar thing with Resistance Fall of Man. When that first came out, my mum came into my room and I was showing her how amazing the window shooting physics were, where you could shoot a pane of glass and like it would just splinter and fall away depending on where you shot it. And I was like, this is amazing. She's like, wow, that's so good. She was probably just placating me, to be honest. But
yeah,
I've never really had people watch me play games before. I've never really had that. I mean, you know, streaming and all that. But, you know, just actually watching and sitting in and watching. But yeah, I think story-heavy games, definitely The Last of Us, that kind of stuff. Basically, the similar ones to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show in that first question. I think as long as there's a good story there, I don't imagine anybody wouldn't be interested in watching unless it was inherently violent or frightening. And that just goes against their sensibilities because everybody's got different tastes. So it's a complete shot in the dark as to what someone would actually be interested in watching, especially if they don't play games regularly.
Yeah. I remember when I was sort of primary school age, I had a couple of friends who, whenever they came over, they would happily just sit and watch me play single-player games. And my mum would always say, like, oh, let Matthew have a go of your game. She doesn't talk like that at all, but that's a mum voice.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she would say, oh, you know, play a two-player game or let him have a turn on the single-player. And I would, like, offer it to him. And he'd be like, whatever, I'm just enjoying watching you. Like, I remember playing Tombi 2. He really enjoyed that. There was another guy who came over, Jonathan, who really enjoyed just watching me play the point-and-click Escape from Horrorland game. And it would, like, help me, like, with solutions and stuff, because he was a bit older than me. And he like, helped me with this really hard puzzle that I couldn't do. But he didn't ever want to play it. And I think some people do just... they're as happy watching a game as playing it. I don't know what it is. I guess, you know, it's hard for... maybe it's hard for me and you to understand, because we'd much rather have a controller in our hand, but... maybe it's just a personality trait out there that some people would rather just sit and watch.
Yeah, yeah. I get like that sometimes. You know, there are certain games where, particularly with Resi, you know, that was a game series that I actually used to really like watching. I used to avoid at all costs, and then I started to just watch other people play it, and then I started to play it myself. But there are certainly some games that I prefer to watch than play, just because I'm not that interested, or if it's spooky, then I just don't want to play it.
Yeah, I found that with Dishonored. I really like playing Dishonored, but I know there's a whole community of people on the Dishonored Reddit, or maybe not even on the Reddit, but where they enable like a cheat or a hack that gives them unlimited whatever the resource was called, like mana, but not mana, you know. Mm-hmm. They then just try and do the most elaborate, like, crazy cinematic. They're leaping around, hop hop hop, like stabbing people. It's like an unstoppable force, and the whole point is to do it kind of flamboyantly. Like, there's this thing that a lot of people do where they throw one of those spring bombs up into the air. And then, like, they use time manipulation and stuff. They move bodies around. They possess people. And then before the spring bomb lands, they've done all this crazy stuff, like planting explosives and firing darts. And then time speeds back up again. And this whole, like, Rube Goldberg thing that they've set up all just goes off in one. And the whole point is, like, people are just trying to show off to each other. And, you know, really use the powers in amazing ways. And that's super fun to watch. Mm. I recommend just, like, checking YouTube for that that kind of thing, because there's loads of it. And people do some really silly, fun things. But, yeah.
Excellent.
Well, it's time, though,
to move on. One weird thing that you do in Dishonored to a weird thing that we're doing right here on this podcast, it's time for weird news.
It's time for weird news. I don't have any paper.
God. Oh, yeah, I was not.
I've got some post-it notes. So I just sort of.
It's time for weird. You got it there?
I'm just flicking through a notepad.
Time for weird news.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Weird news time. It's time for weird news. It is some weird news. Peter's got some weird news, I think.
I have. I've got... Oh, boy. I mean, so this weird news story, like I think the last weird news story I brought to this podcast, and also the past couple of things I've brought to our other podcast that we do, it's a bit visual, really, okay. Which is not great for an audio medium, but this at least... sort of gives me more scope to describe things. I think this works in a non-visual form, but you should definitely check out the link that we will post in the description of the YouTube version of this podcast. In fact, I will send it to you now, because, you know, we should at least get your reaction.
Okay.
Terrifying model shows what avid gamers could look like in 20 years.
Okay, I have a lot of questions. The fact that it's from Lad Bible already raises questions and concerns.
It does, doesn't it? So Amy sent me this. It came up on her Facebook feed. She doesn't follow Lad Bible, I don't think, but someone has shared it or something like that.
I can't believe games makes your hair thin.
I know. So, right. So first, when I heard this headline, I thought it meant, in 20 years' time, a certain subsection of humanity will have branched off into their own subspecies, which I thought, that's not going to happen in 20 years. What is this terrible news story? Right. But what I realise is what it is that researchers have made a model of what could happen to someone who is addicted to games. If they continue to live out that addiction for 20 years, this is what that individual could end up looking like.
So Lad Bible in expected fashion has completely undersold for the purpose of clickbait, when really what we're looking at is someone who has acute addiction to playing video games and not going outside, and they've just described it as avid gamers. I'm an avid gamer. I don't have an addiction. I play maybe 2 hours of games a day at most.
Yeah. I mean, in the first line of this article written by Claire Reed on Lad Bible, it says, researchers have created a model of what a gaming addict could find themselves looking like in 20 years' time. And let me tell you, it's not pretty. Now, we immediately move on to the second paragraph, which tells you all you need to know. The model, which has been named Michael, was created by onlinecasino.ca.
Oh, so, my God.
A really, reliable, valid scientific study here. But what I'm going to do is cut straight to the diagram, which is annotated with a whole load of different issues that this gamer is suffering from.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like some sort of troll.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
His proportions are all messed up. So we have got indent in skull from pressure and overuse of headphones.
Oh, God, no, that's not... No, how tight are those headphones?
Yeah, What kind of headphones are you wearing? And how soft is your skull? It's like a newborn baby. I think if you put headphones on a newborn baby, it could maybe cause issues, but...
Yeah, maybe.
Dark circles around eyes from sleep deprivation and excessive screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Bald patches from lack of sunlight and vitamin D. Bloodshot eyes. Irritation from staring at a monitor. Hairy ears. And it, for the reasoning for the hairy ears, it just says lack of air circulation.
What?
Does that... Do you get hairy ears if there's not enough air circulation? What is that? I don't understand.
Oh, my God.
Hunched back and rounded shoulders from poor posture over time and from lack of movement, it says.
I think they'd be more likely to die from DVT than they would, you know. Mm. So some sort of blockage in some vital artery than they would.
Well, I think we get there later. It's one of the last ones. But
is he? Just... Does he look like this because he's been dead for a while?
Well, it's entirely possible, yeah. The next one just says, obese. From increased food intake and lack of exercise. Mm-hmm. Eczema, stress-induced, it says. I don't know why they've decided that, you know, well, maybe, I guess, addiction is probably going to be inherently stressful, but still. Pale skin, again, from deficiency in vitamins B12 and D. And then there's just an annotation pointing towards this lumpy wrist on one of his arms, and it just says... first-person shooter, where all the others have named the ailment, and in this case, it's naming the cause, which is weird. But so he's got first-person shooter's wrist. It's like tennis elbow.
Oh, my God.
And what that is excessive use of mouse and keyboard causing numbness, and he's got sort of lumpy wrist. He's got PlayStation thumb, apparently.
Yeah.
Specifically PlayStation, not Xbox, which is RSI from excessive use of a controller. There are blisters on his fingertips from excessive use of controller or keyboard.
Okay.
He's got trigger finger, which is an RSI on his trigger finger. Nintendo arthritis.
Yeah.
Ulceration on hands from excessive controller use. We've got two left, and here they are. You called it. Varicose veins, poor blood flow from sitting for a long period of time, and swollen ankles from lack of movement. So I do think he probably is supposed to have deep vein thrombosis as well.
Yeah, he probably would have just died. If it was ever going to reach a point where he could look like this, he probably would have died
from
something else.
Yeah, I think so. Gaming addiction is now recognized by the World Health Organization as an official psychological disorder and is distinguished from healthy gaming by impaired control over gaming, increasing priority given to gaming over other activities to the extent that gaming takes precedence over other interests and daily activities, and continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences.
Yeah.
God.
So just a regular addiction. It's good that it's recognized. A lot of people took issue with this. It doesn't mean because you sat there playing your video games that you're an addict or that people think you're an addict. It's people whose inability, who can't stop playing games when their life is falling down, you know, around them. They're just
as a
stuck
result
inside.
Of it. Yeah.
This is the most insulting and inaccurate and probably dangerous thing I've ever seen shared around.
Isn't it dreadful? It's horrible.
It's just medically not correct in any sense.
I'm surprised, though, that onlinecasino.ca couldn't get something medically correct. You know, all of the doctors who work there, you would have thought. Yeah.
It's also strange that Lad Bible haven't linked to the original post.
Yeah, it's true, actually. Oh, right down at the bottom, it does actually say you can check out the full research here.
Oh,
so there is a link at the very end.
Looking at it now.
But the article ends with researchers have shared 5 tips to help avid gamers stay fit and healthy. And they're all fairly simple enough, it says patronizingly. Number 1, exercise. Regular exercise and stretching will help keep joints in good condition and tackle obesity. Number 2, prevent eye strain. Keep the room well lit, etc. Number 3, healthy diet. Make sure you eat a balanced, nutritious diet. Number 4, posture. Remind yourself to sit properly and support your back. And number 5, hydrate! Make sure to drink plenty of water and avoid excessively drinking fizzy drinks. It is so patronizing, isn't it, this?
It is. Here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Now looking at the original onlinecasino.ca website.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering why on earth they've done this. Why would they do this?
I don't know why an online casino would do it. Yeah.
Because in the top right, it obviously says online casino published by onlinecasino.ca. And you can click through and it will take you to their homepage where it's got all the games that you can play. It says the percentage of the payout. Is it because they're trying to, in a very, very insidious and horrifying way, attract, at least in some form, in a lot of ways, many people will be clicking on like you or I, who are just like, what the hell is this absolute nonsense? But some people who do have addictive personalities and who saw this and thought, okay, I mean, I play a lot of games. Maybe I want to have a look at this and work out what on earth this is about and why I might look like that in 20 years. And then they'll click through and see a load of casino games. Is there a connection there? Because I can't see any other connection between onlinecasino.ca publishing a model of what someone with an addictive personality will look like in 20 years. I can't see another connection there. Why on earth would they post that if they weren't trying to lure vulnerable gamers in to play their games and it just spend a load of money?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. Because essentially, online casino gambling is not really much different from just online gaming in another form. You know, if you're addicted to online gambling, I guess medically you would be diagnosed with an online gambling addiction rather than a gaming addiction. But there, you know, if you're sitting at your computer playing roulette, it's kind of akin to just sitting and playing cards in The Witcher, right? So you would think it would be problematic for the casino to reveal to people, oh, by the way, you shouldn't be sitting at your computer all day playing games. Like, you would think that it would be in their interest to try and convince people that it's fine to continue to sit at your desk and keep gambling on their website. So I don't know what vested interest they have in this, other than maybe trying to look good. Like, oh, look at us. We're really responsible. We might be an online casino and profiting off people's, you know, as you say, addictive personalities. But it's fine because we once did a study about the health aspects of gaming and we're trying to make people better. So I guess they're just trying to, you know, look good and
I just don't get how this makes them look good though, because they get ridiculed. It doesn't. They're getting ridiculed because this is nonsense. But also there's definitely a crossover between people who play video games and people who play video poker or video casino games, like the apps on their phone and so on. There's definitely crossover there. If you're covering this subject material, like, look how sensationalized and nonsensical this is, what a gaming addict will look like. And some people probably who fall into that category of leaning towards addiction with video games, certainly playing way too many, with personality types that would probably suit them to play a lot of casino gambling games, will see this on a casino gambling website. It only takes one click, and then they're presented with a full page full of ways to lose a load of money. I don't want that to be the case, but I can't shake the idea that why on earth else would a casino website post this nonsense if it wasn't to try and bring in new customers?
Sorry, we're dwelling on this for a very long time now, and we should move on, but there are sources down at the bottom, and I clicked on the one that was for the pressure on the skull, and it just links you to... They've searched Google Books for the phrase, "Can bones deform from constant light pressure?"
Wow, what a scientific study.
Yeah, and it just takes them to a page where some of the keywords are highlighted, like the words bones and light and deform come up in a couple of... It's ridiculous. People should check out the sources on this. There's a whole thing on like gamers' thumb, video gamers' thumb on a website about, you know, health and so on. And under the free dictionary by Farlex Medical Dictionary, there's an entry called trigger finger related to gamer's grip. Which is, just talking about like RSIs and stuff. But
Jesus.
God, the sources alone on that page are a real, they're a whole other rabbit hole to go down. But we should probably move on.
Just don't give onlinecasino.ca any business whatsoever.
No.
Just don't. I mean, what a load of crap. And what a load of potentially quite insidious crap as well. So steer clear.
As you say, gaming addiction is a real thing and is not a load of crap. But, you know, I would rather take my medical advice and my information from the World Health Organization or other such reputable sites than gaming online casino.ca. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
So ridiculous that they might be trying to bring in new customers. So yeah, don't go there. Just don't go there. Okay, my weird news. It's from Push Square. Random is what it says. PS5's DualSense controller shares a name with washing machines, gas detectors, and hair serum.
Oh, what, DualSense?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Sony may have shocked us all with the reveal of the PlayStation 5's new controller, but perhaps more alarming than its form factor and color scheme is its name, DualSense. To emphasize the idea of touch, the manufacturer has decided to reboot its long-running DualShock branding for the first time since the PlayStation 3's ill-fated six-axis controller.
Mm.
Surprisingly, though, it's not the first product to be named DualSense at all. In fact, while the Japanese giant is marketing and selling a completely different type of product with its pad, there are potential legal hurdles that it may have to overcome, as the trademark is already owned by multiple different organizations. First, there's a freestanding washing machine from AEG. The new combi washer dryer with DualSense technology tails the temperature and drum motion to different fabrics and adjusts programs to the specific load, the product's blurb explains. Everything from, I don't know why it continues, why do we need to know so much about AEG's combi washing dryer? Then, there's the industrial scientific gas detector. DualSense technology uses redundant sensors to determine the concentration of the target gas in the atmosphere and reduce the risk of an instrument failure. It then continues on like that. And that's not all. The name DualSense is also attributed to a type of hair serum and mattress toppers. Sony's legal team will have done its due diligence, of course, and the PlayStation blog states that the platform holder already owns the trademark for the controller's name. Seeing as none of these products are competing, it should be fine, but it's interesting nonetheless.
It is interesting, but it's a bit of a nothing story, isn't it, in some ways?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's good weird news, but in terms of, you know, that was written up as though, again, it's a bit clickbaity. It's a bit saying like, oh, there might be issues with that name. Oh, guys, what's going to happen? It's not. Me and you know, we're not legal experts, but we know, having had run-ins with trademarks in the past.
Oh, boy.
That it's to do with, like, the crossover of certain industries. I mean, that article tells you all you need to know. If there's already four different products out there with that name in their trademark, evidently lots of products and services can coexist with the name DualSense, provided they're not stepping on each other's toes. And trademarks fall under certain categories, you know, entertainment, catering, you know, utilities, all that kind of thing. So you can have the same name trademarked in different categories. So that's clearly what's happened here, is that Sony have checked, can we have this if it's for an entertainment device? No such entertainment device exists under that name. Yes, of course you can. The end.
Excellent. And that's all there is to it. Yeah, I think it was more, the article is, for weird news, it's just sort of, you know, it's not meant to be, the fact that it was titled under random, it wasn't like, breaking news, it was very much brought out from the angle of, there's going to be no real issue here, but it's quite funny that it's under the same name.
Yeah, no, it is funny and interesting, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me in a way, because DualSense is quite a good, I quite like it, DualSense as a name.
I feel like DualSense is definitely a term that I've heard elsewhere.
Right.
At various points.
It sounds like a contraceptive, doesn't it? DualSense.
You reckon?
I think. Yeah.
DualSense.
Yeah.
I feel like touch, dual touch.
For his pleasure and hers.
Yeah, exactly.
Or his and his.
Or his and his, or hers and hers, you know? Everyone can use condoms if they want.
Yeah.
For whatever you want. Whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
Another question from Gavin Peter.
From Gavin Peter. Gavin says, hey, new patron, first time posting.
Wow.
With the world on fire, I'm not spending as much as I usually would on cider. So I thought it's about time I tried paying you for content. Novel idea, I know. Well, thanks, Gavin.
Thank you.
Gavin says, what's your most impressive rage quit? What, if anything, did you do to overcome it? And how has it scarred your psyche since? Am I just angling to hear another rendition of Ben versus the Adamantoids from Final Fantasy XV? We'll never know. Please stay safe, and thank you for the impressive amount of work that the whole Triple Jump family is putting in at this most ridiculous time. Big love, Gavin.
His name is actually Big Love Gavin.
Big Love Gavin. Big Love Gavin Peter.
Yeah, Big Love Gavin Peter. Thank you, Gavin. Yeah. Thank you for supporting us as well.
Indeed.
Okay, so what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with rage quits, yeah, and all kinds of stuff like that. I've never spoken about the Adamantoids on here.
No.
On this podcast before. That was an optional super boss from Final Fantasy XV, and there was a trophy for killing it. And it is a stupid boss that doesn't even do that much damage to you at all. It just has so much health that when I went to fight it at the end of the game with all of my characters super leveled with all the best stuff, it took about 45 minutes to an hour of just holding attack before it died. It was just, as much as anything else, it was a time investment. And I got about 3/4 of the way there. I can't really remember anymore, but I got really close. And then Final Fantasy XV was a great game, but it wasn't perfect. And the Adamantoids, for some reason, this giant mountain of a tortoise suddenly rotated on the spot, video game glitch fast, about 90 degrees, and it shot my character about 6 miles across the map, so far away from the Adamantoids that it ended the encounter and it went back to being a mountain again. And I had to start again. And that made me quite upset. But I didn't actually rage quit. I think I left it there at that point. I was like, okay, it's such a time investment. I know I can do it. I'll come back to it another time. And then I went back and I did it second time and it was fine. But it was just really annoying. It was just like the game broke and therefore I wasted my time for a long amount of time. And but that was awful though. Most of my rage quits have come from trophy related stuff in the past, mm-hmm. where I've just been like mad and I've thrown a controller, or I had an Assassin's Creed Unity special edition box in the corner of my room at one point, and I just like kicked it really hard and I kicked it and I broke the box. But it was just the box. There was nothing in it. It was just the empty box. But yeah, usually it's difficulty related trophies, things like Mass Effect 2 on the hardest difficulty and stuff like that, where you just reach a level of such frustration that you get the stress-induced eczema that you see on the Michael model from onlinecasino.ca, the world's worst website. Luckily, I'm rage quit free for quite a while. I still get frustrated when playing games. Who doesn't? You know, it happens. Mm. But it's not something, rage quitting is not something that I do anymore.
I seem to remember headlines at the time of the release of Final Fantasy XV, where they were saying things like, the Adamantoids takes like 10 hours or something.
No. And I can't remember. Maybe from the start, perhaps.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And then it turned out that that's not what it was. I think it maybe was just literally just a false rumor that started spreading around and no one had was even fact-checking it. Mm. Or just, you know, less reputable, less reliable outlets were just taking the story and running with it immediately, saying, oh yeah, it takes like 10 hours to kill the Adamantoids, it's ridiculous.
Like Lad Bible.
Exactly. onlinecasino.ca. And then it turned out it wasn't the case. You know, it took maybe an hour or whatever. But anyway, I think I've talked in the past that about rage quitting and stuff, and I never really used to smash controllers and stuff. I think because I just knew that I'd be in too much trouble if I did it. So I've never broken a controller. I've never really thrown one or you know, wrecked a console or a telly or anything or a wall. But I do remember sort of almost angry crying when I was very young playing Tekken 1 and getting to the final boss, Heihachi, who was just really hard to defeat. I mean, subsequent Heihachis in the other games, no issue at all. They're just kind of the same level as everyone else, near enough. But back in Tekken 1, he was super tough. And then in a few other Tekken games after that, the final bosses have been really tough on and off. Like in Tekken 3, no issues whatsoever. Tekken Tag, pretty doable. Tekken 5, oh my god, Jinpachi, who's Heihachi's dad.
Jinpachi,
yeah.
Okay.
He turned into this big sort of demon form where he had a big toothy jaw across his belly, like his whole belly turned into a mouth, and he could spit fireballs at you without really any warning that would do massive amounts of damage. He used to piss me off a bit, but really the worst like fighting game boss I've ever fought was the Tekken 6 boss Azazel, who was this sort of crocodile thing, pink crystal crocodile wearing ancient Egyptian garb, who was twice the height of any other character in the game and would just sort of fly around and just absolutely flatten you. It was just ridiculous. God. It was unbelievable. And that really did piss me off to the point that I just stopped playing the game. Like, I just, you know, I tried to, you know, I would eventually defeat him a few, in a Tekken game, you run through the story with a new character every time, and you unlock a character every time you defeat the final boss. And I would get through it maybe two or three times, and then at that point I was just kind of thinking, I don't want to do this anymore, you know? I've defeated this boss eventually, like, three times, and now I'm done. And I never really played much Tekken 6 after that. The only other thing that comes to mind is some of the bosses in Kingdom Hearts were real tough. I had a real hard time with Maleficent, who had two forms, which I didn't even know about. So just fighting her while she's just the evil queen with horns was hard enough. And you would finally get her health bar down to zero. It took me so many attempts. I was like, yes, yes. And then she just turned into a dragon like she does in the film.
For God's sake. What a cheater. Suddenly
have loads more health again. I think it did checkpoint at that point, so that was good. But still, by that point, you'd used all of your items and potions and stuff, so you had nothing left to fight the dragon with.
Mm-hmm.
And also Sephiroth was in that game and was ridiculous. He had an ability that would get rid of all your magic, like mana, and he would put your health down to 1 HP.
Good
so you
lad.
Had no mana to heal yourself with, and you had no health, and if he hit you once, you would die. So you had to have loads and loads and loads of like health potions and mana potions with you at all times. So
that's my big spooky boy there.
Yeah, that was real tough.
That's how he does it.
So yeah, they really used to get me in Kingdom Hearts.
Oh God, excellent. Well, I mean, you know, games continue to be frustrating from time to time, but you know, it's not all it's not always doom and gloom.
No.
Unless, could that be what we're talking about in a big discussion? I don't know. You'll just have to find out on the other side of this paper shuffle, because it's time for the big discussion. Big discussion time. The big discussion today comes from David Lever. The recent Nintendo Direct Mini revealed the Handsome Collection, Bioshock Collection, and XCOM 2 for Switch. However, for Borderlands and XCOM, the cartridge is only 8 GB with a massive download to get the rest of the game, more than the Switch's internal memory. Larger cartridges are available, but would increase the price. What are your thoughts regarding massive day one downloads like this? Keep up the good work and stay safe, David.
Day one downloads, massive day one downloads are... They really retracted from one of the good things that console gaming had over the top of PC gaming.
Mm.
Over PC gaming. which, you know, PC gaming is still an issue, as Ben and I have discovered over the past few weeks, just trying to set things up sometimes that it's just super difficult, like trying to get a server going to play multiplayer online. Or, you know, if you've got the wrong, like, graphics card, or if your settings are wrong on, like, your system settings on your computer, you can have issues. That's all a big problem. But one of the things that consoles always had over PC gaming was that it's just plug in and play. You just pop the disc in, and it would just run. You know, back in PS1, PS2 era, that was one of the great things. Whereas, you know, I'd buy a PC game from Game, and then I'd have to install it for ages. Now I feel like that's been lost, really. You know, not only do you have to put the disc in now, and it actually has to install the game from the disc to an extent, but then once it's done all that, you try and launch it, and it's like, oh, Hang on, let's just download this 22 gig update first before we do anything. So I think that's one of the that's the biggest shame about that is that it's no longer able to look down at the PC quote-unquote master race and go, ha, well, at least we don't have to wait for massive installs when we get our first...
Yeah, how are your drivers doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, you know, this does happen. If we're talking patches, then, you know, that's just a problem with every game, it seems.
Yeah.
But this is really an issue for Switch users.
That, yeah, in this case, that, yeah, the way it's bundled.
The other home console owners don't necessarily have because the hard drive space is massive. Switch games are clearly inherently just smaller in size. And so when you're porting over these games that are on other consoles, it raises just this whole new issue of, you know, because of course the Handsome Collection is about God knows how many gigabytes, 50 gigabytes, something like that, maybe even more. That's not going to fit on a tiny cartridge anyway. And the rest just is going to have to go. There's no way around it. It's not good. It's not an ideal solution. I really do feel for Switch owners that want to play these games but are going to have to look into further internal storage or memory cards or whatever to try and bulk up the memory so they can actually play these games, or the storage, I should say. But this is just, unfortunately, one of the issues with playing games on Switch, or at least one of the issues with playing third-party games that have been on other platforms on Switch, because they are just bigger than what the Switch is really natively capable of handling. You know, you've got The Witcher 3 on there. You've got, I can't remember if Doom 2016 has made it onto there yet or not. I know it was going to go on there. I'm not entirely sure. But these games, they run fine. You know, they've had to have a downgrade so that they can actually run on the Switch. But at the same time, they're still big games, you know, they still take up a lot of space, and it's a shame, of course, and it sucks, but that is just, it's just a problem that Switch has that no one else does, and you're playing games that come from a place that don't have these problems, and I don't really know how that problem could be solved, other than to necessitate more storage in the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that's completely exclusive to the Switch either, because, excuse me, we had the same issue with the initial release. I'm sure this did actually happen in the end, didn't it? With the Spyro Reignited trilogy.
Yeah.
Do you remember? They only had Spyro 1 on the disc, and you had to download the rest of it. I think now they have released, there's like a new build available where everything is in fact on the disc. But yeah, no, certainly it's an issue about the amount of storage on the medium in question. And yeah, no, it's a difficult thing. We've got a quote here from TechRadar, haven't we?
Yes.
Which says, while the inclusion of these AAA games on the Switch is to be welcomed, we're getting to a point where physical game cartridges simply can't cope with the amount of data needed to load up modern titles. Right now, buying these games on cartridge amounts to little more than a bulky redeem code, and will still require you to use up most, if not all, of the Switch's 32 gig internal storage. There are, thankfully, plenty of good microSD cards for the Nintendo Switch worth considering, which can expand your storage capacity several times, but it really does defeat the purpose of a physical release.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this kind of feels to me like, you know, some of the initial worries people had about the Switch is kind of like finally actually catching up to the Switch itself, because When it was first announced, it seemed a bit too good to be true that you had this like little portable thing that, you know, everything was played off a tiny little card, and, you know, you could take it with you, but it was meant to be kind of as good as, you know, the AAA home console gaming that we were used to. And yeah, as I say, it seemed a bit too good to be true. And although we have had a few things in the meantime where, you know, games have been ported to Switch and they've had to have a downgrade on their graphical fidelity, etc., so that they can run properly, this really does feel like, oh, okay, no, now really there are some holes in the system here, and we're having problems. If you want to put Bioshock Collection and XCOM, or well, actually not Bioshock, that's doing okay, but Borderlands and XCOM onto the console, there's going to be a problem there. It's, you know, it's a bit worrying for the future of the console, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, as long as Switch continues to put out great exclusives and have games developed specifically for it, that console will always have its place. It will always exist in its own, as we've said before, its own sort of little stream, just doing whatever it wants. It's not bothered by what Xbox and PlayStation are up to. However, there are tons of fantastic, incredible third-party games on those platforms that Switch players understandably will want to play. However, due to just the inherent nature of how the Switch is designed, it either won't be able to handle it full stop, or it'll be a downgraded version. But either way, it's going to take up a lot of space, and it's a console that doesn't have a lot of space on it. And yes, you can buy additional storage, but that is just, as David said, adding to the cost of these games. You're gonna have to factor that in, or maybe even just have one game installed at a time, which doesn't sound like the end of the world, because a lot of PlayStation gamers have to do that, because games are so massive now anyway that they do take up a ridiculous amount of space. And that's not even taking into consideration patches, you know, these day one patches. Fallout 76, 50 gigabytes, the size of the original game patch day one, didn't fix anything at all anyway, but it was an online game where you had to have that. And if the Switch really starts to look into bringing more of these multi-platform big budget AAA releases onto Switch, especially if they want it day and date with the PS4 and Xbox One releases, for example, then they're also going to be faced with these patches. They're also going to have to deal with it. And when you've got that on top of a console that can't really handle games of that size because there's just not enough room, it almost completely just bricks those consumers off from ever experiencing those games on Switch, which is kind of a shame. But it's just, I don't know how they could get around it, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. What, you know, when I say, you know, I worry for the future of the console, I don't mean necessarily whether it'll be able to continue, because as you say, you know, there's some fantastic first party stuff on there, and Nintendo will always be able to design games for the Switch that they know will run exactly how they want them to run. You know, they've got an excellent roster of characters. They've got some, you know, some great IP that they can always fall back on. So that's no issue. The Switch will continue to put out great content. But yeah, if the Switch players want to still be able to, because they've had a taste for it now as well, it's almost like you've kind of shown them, like, oh look, we can play The Witcher on the Switch, we can play Skyrim, and they it's now kind of making these people think, like, oh yeah, you know, I should be able to play these AAA games on my Switch, why shouldn't I? And now as things catch up, and you know, games are inevitably only going to get bigger and bigger as we move towards the next generation, you do feel for the Switch gamers who signed up thinking that they would be able to kind of stay up to date on the big AAA titles, and I worry for its future in that sense, that you know, it could just prove to be a bit of a disappointment, or it could fall behind to a certain extent behind Sony and Microsoft. And you're right that Nintendo, that I don't think they're worried about whether or not they do fall behind Sony and Microsoft in that way, because they are trying to kind of forge their own thing and be this portable mini console. But I still think, you know, it's worth them not being too complacent in that regard.
No, definitely. We'll see what happens as hopefully those games do end up making their way onto Switch, and if we see many more. I mean, there's clearly a reason why we don't see a lot of these AAA games on there. They definitely attempted that with the Wii U, but the Wii U had this ridiculous touchpad tablet thing that a lot of people didn't want to work on. And again, it's just that disparity between what Nintendo wants to do and what the rest of the industry wants to do. And in a sense, that's what makes Nintendo so special, is because they're doing their own thing. But when it comes to this is a prime example of why things would need to be different if Nintendo was to properly get back on board with the multi-platform AAA industry. And some people, they're not that fussed. They don't even need that. They don't care.
Yeah.
They like that it isn't there. But when we see examples like this, this is why that stuff isn't there. It's not because Nintendo doesn't want it. It's because Nintendo can't have it because of the decisions they've made to make their console unique, which is a good thing. It's good to be unique. And they're clearly doing something very right with Switch, but we will see. as more games do or do not make their way onto the platform.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure a lot of people would have loved to have had Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order on their Switch, you know?
Yeah.
Play that on the go. Yeah. There's a lot of games that would be amazing on the go if they would run, but they're just too big. Not let alone the power of the hardware. Clearly, what a lot of people maybe didn't realize is that they're just too big. They're just too big to even fit on it, full stop, yeah. Even if they could run.
Yeah. Yep, you're right.
Well, there we go. Let us know what you think in the comments below. And if you want to reach out to us, you can do via the following means.
Triple Jump, Team Triple Jump everywhere. Not Triple Jump, Team Triple Jump everywhere.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/Team Triple Jump. Twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. That's where we do all of our content. We stream over on Twitch at the moment, pretty much exclusively. But we certainly have streamed on YouTube in the past and will continue to do so in the future. We're modded by Lord Brotovich and Cecil Prums when we're streaming. So thank you to our stream mods. Social media, twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. Luke Eldon is our Facebook social media man, doing a great job. Thank you, Luke. We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/YouGuessedIt, Team Triple Jump. That's where we have all kinds of different rewards available. You can ask questions on this podcast. You can access a special Patreon exclusive room in our Discord, which incidentally is bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. Discord is modded by Jack, Joe, and Crimson Dragonfly. If you want an audio version of this podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, you can go to play.acast.com/s/Triple Jump. There's no team there.
No.
And the website, triplej.merp. We've got a careers page over there. And right now, there is a posting for a full-time, in-office, UK, Newcastle-based video editor. So if you want to actually come and work for us, with us, in our office, and you think you've got what it takes to edit with the best of them, that's not me, that's our other staff. They're the best of them. then head to triplej.merp, check out the careers page. There is a downloadable thing there where you can get like a trial edit and so on. So show us what you got. Finally, our new channel where we're putting our VODs is available at the moment at triplej.merp/VODs. We will inevitably have a custom YouTube URL for that at some point, but we don't have one right now. Ben will tell you about that, I'm sure. There we go.
Absolutely. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram, you can do at @ThatPeterAustin, @BenPotter20, and on Twitter, @ThatPeterAustin, @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday. Streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Thursday being the joint streams, Blaze It, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday being the solo streams. Worst Games is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. It's not a Worst Games Ever week this week. Podcast every Saturday. We try to do shows every so often. There is actually a show that just went out on Friday. That was Main Menu. Hope you enjoyed watching it. Why don't you go watch it now? That's the last one we've got for a while, obviously. So do savour it, much like you would the delicious food that we cooked on this show. Please leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. We've got this VODs channel, as Peter mentioned, triplej.mup/VODs. Going on there will be the solo VODs. So when Peter and I stream alone, those VODs go on triplej.mup/VODs. It's going to be an official Triple Jump VODs channel. Just the solo streams, the joint streams, Blaze It, that we do on Thursday, will continue to be uploaded to our main regular channel. But if you want the solo VODs, triplej.mub/VODs. We've got every single VOD, bar a couple, since we did the switch over at the beginning of the year. So there's a huge backlog of stuff for you to watch there. It's not all live yet, because we're trying to hit the threshold of 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of watch time. And once we hit that, we're able to monetize the channel and actually make it financially viable thing for us to do. So for now, there's just a few things on there. But if you can go and watch those, give it a subscribe. As soon as we hit the threshold, you'll have 4 months worth of back catalog of VODs to watch. And all of the new VODs as they air will also be going on there immediately afterwards. So make sure you go check that out if you can. Did a video this week, little experiment in The Sims. to see what would happen if a sim version of me went into self-isolation for 7 days with no social contact, not being allowed to go outside, and with total autonomy, just to see what would happen. That video's up on the channel now if you'd like to see that. And we've also been asked by the BBC to put together a podcast for them, which is now live and out on various platforms. You can listen to it on the BBC Sounds website, full stop. But the podcast is called BBC Original Pilot Material. They're doing a series on gaming at the moment. Currently, it appears to only be available on their website, but I'm told it will be going on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and stuff like that. So if you want to go listen to that, we are, I believe, episode 3 in that series, or episode 4. And you'll see it because there's a picture of me on it. And it's about, and it says the Triple Jump podcast in the description. And it's about getting into game development and all that kind of stuff. So go give that a listen when you can. And our thanks to the BBC for asking us to be involved. It's very cool. Yeah. Right, I'm done now. We've got a sponsor.
We have. Yeah, this is sponsored by the Sony Microsoft Dual Touch washing machine. It's a combi washer dryer, and it works on every console because it's manufactured by Microsoft and Sony and Microsoft and Sony, probably Nintendo as well. Just look at it. It looks like it works on everything. I think Sega had something to do with this as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's a multi-purpose, multi-format, multi-platform, multi-generational, multi-geological era controller that works on your mattress covers, mattress toppers.
Oh, amazing. Fantastic. Wow, that's fantastic.
DualSense, it's coming at you right now.
You know, forever. It just makes DualSense.
It does, yeah.
Okay, we're going to go now. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Oh, we didn't decide where we were going to walk today.
Oh.
I mean, people have already been seeing it for the whole episode, but where do you think we should be walking today? We've done a dessert, we've done the Grand Canyon, we've done the Windows Vista Hill.
North Pole?
And go to the North Pole.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the North Pole, everybody. Thank you very much for listening / watching, and we'll see you again next weekend. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.